The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. The most obvious problem confronting humankind today is that of survival. And every report you hear about wars and rumors of wars, about weather, about political maneuverings around the world, about Vietnam, about the economy, about the great society, or anything else, is overshadowed by that one all-consuming problem. The question of survival. Will we still be alive in the next 10 or 20 years? This is the nagging specter of fear and doubt that affects every single thing we say and do. Housewives don't want to talk about it. People don't want to hear about it. Matter of fact, we had a fellow write in and say, I wish you wouldn't tell me the plain truth and the facts about the way the world is going today. It scares me so badly, I simply don't want to hear about it anymore. But, you know, today the appalling knowledge of how all life can be exterminated by at least three separate methods hangs heavy over the heads of every single one of us. And any objective study of human history leaves you without the answers as to how it came to be. People simply don't know where we're going. And not understanding the big picture of world news, not understanding exactly the whys and the wherefores, feeling more or less like a helpless bystander, hearing the announcements of government leaders, seeing policies change, seeing the escalation of the war in Vietnam, worrying about a massive land war in Asia, wondering what about the weather upsets, the average person feels on the sidelines, feels helpless, feels like a spectator, a giant in a giant arena where they're simply watching this happening and then the other. Their attention is directed first to this place and then to the other, but they have no control over what is happening. Now, this world is exactly what its leaders have made it. You figure you didn't make it that way, and I figure I didn't. And the average person is a little bit perplexed by some of the policies. You hear on some of the talk programs people wondering about all the money being spent in Vietnam. Farmers in South Africa and Botswanaland are worried about their crops, about the drought, and about government prices, and about a massive cattle lift from one area to another. And they're wondering what causes it and what's happening to us. Well, you know, the question most people ask increasingly is, living in a world such as this is, where do I fit? Where am I going? What's in it for me? What is ahead for my loved ones and for my family? What are my guidelines? Why am I alive? You know, the 10% of Americans today admit they're tired of living. That's a fact. You know, the one greatest single cause of death among college students in the United States is suicide. Remarkable, isn't it? Remember, the world is what its leaders make it, and the leaders of the world come from the universities, sources in various fields, whether it's business, industry, whether it's doctors, whether it is sociologists, psychologists, military men, historians, industrialists. These are the people who finally find their way into cabinet rank and into various administrative positions in government, lawyers, politicians. But what are the guidelines that make government leaders decide on certain policies that help them decide whether one course is right or another course is wrong? Because remember, you feel pretty much like a helpless bystander, don't you? Oh, I know, you might either support or be against a certain policy. But on the other hand, you don't feel like you have very much power to change it. You don't really affect the decision one way or the other. As one newscaster said, rather sarcastically, he said, do you know, if in the United States over here we had elected Goldwater, we might be in a war in Vietnam by now? Now, he was more or less illustrating the point I want to make, that there isn't any foreseeing the exact trend in world conditions so far as the average leader is concerned. Even leaders high in government aren't quite sure what may occur, and the average citizen is even more in the dark than the leaders are. But the problem is, this world is exactly what its leaders have made it. But how do the leaders lead? What are the guidelines they use in decision-making? Down which course do they take the nations and therefore the entirety of the world? What is the set of standards on which their decisions are based? It's one of the biggest questions you need to answer, because if there isn't some set of standards, some decisive right from wrong, some overall moral conduct or moray or set of laws that guides and leads human beings along certain paths that are right and normal and that are going to lead to the right outcome, as opposed to other paths which are wrong and immoral and which are going to lead to disaster. Unless there is some set of guidelines, then you might as well sit back with the other 10% to say they're tired of living and say to yourself you figure society is doomed and there isn't any chance for anybody in the future. Well, people admit they don't know very much about world events. They don't see their way clear into the future. They don't see the outcome of them. They can't see ahead in the course of present events and make any sense out of the crazy quilt patchwork of seemingly interrelated and disconnected and confusing events that happen all over the world. But do you know the outcome is already decided? Do you know your future is decided in advance? I mean the big alliances and the big picture of the way the world is headed in tomorrow's year, the age beyond. It's already written. The outcome is sure. It's been written in advance. It was predicted and put to writing centuries ago. But the minute I tell you where, your human nature is going to say, oh yeah? Now watch and see. It was predicted in the Bible. What's your reaction? The average person has a natural reaction of animosity and suspicion toward the Bible simply because they look at the way people live and they call themselves religious people and they say, well, if that's religion, you can have it. But now, wait a minute, because you might realize that 54% of all church-going Americans, at least, and you people in Perth and England can listen in for a moment about that. I don't know what your statistics are, but I know in the United States it's 54%. Of church-going, professing Christians can't name for you the first four books of the New Testament. So regardless as to what you think about religious people, and if you use this excuse, as I've been talking about on this program, you see the way people live, and you say, well, they couldn't be God's people, therefore I don't believe in God. You see people breaking laws, and so you say the laws must be changing. No, people are changing. People are breaking laws, all right. People disregard the laws of God, and people snub and disregard the Bible, all right. But that doesn't do away with the Bible one way or the other. Bible prophecy can be proved. We have these booklets I've been announcing almost every program, Does God Exist? And the Proof of the Bible. And the booklet on the Proof of the Bible deals with Bible prophecy, showing you direct, specific places on the earth, city-states, governments, races of people, a king by name, his first name, and 400 years before he was born. Identifying areas of the earth and showing you pictures of how prophecies came to pass exactly on schedule, just as they were predicted. And these prophecies were put to pen and whatever, vellum or whatever was used as writing material, by different men who never even knew each other, who might have lived hundreds of miles apart, who lived in different ages. And this booklet on the Proof of the Bible shows you the Bible is reliable, that it is absolutely up to the minute, that it's up to date right now. Because the whole plan and the whole purpose in what is going on here below is revealed through Bible prophecy. It answers the big question, the really big question of all, why? Why does it have to happen? Why all the bizarre circumstances that seem to lead us down the road to war? Why do the innocent suffer? Why sickness? Why disease? Why economic disaster? Why crashes? Why loss of life? Why do we have to live in an age where we have, on the one hand, paradoxically, more of the technological and scientific skill and know-how to provide for us a never-never world of a glittering Disneyland of leisure and pleasure? And on the other hand, while science can give us so many gadgets and instruments, it can't give us the moral qualities and standards we need to control them. What a paradox it is. In the age we have, 90% of all scientists who have ever lived are alive at this moment because of the tremendous snowball effect or the tremendous increase in scientific endeavor of recent years, the last decade in particular. So that in the age when we have 90% of all scientists who have ever drawn breath alive, active, thinking, and working right now today, people who have gone into various universities and tried to study in special skills in technology, alive and working to give us the instruments and the implements by which to build a bigger and a better world. At the same time, they have given us the most effective weapons and the most destructive force that has ever been the possession of mankind. But they haven't told us how to control it. Science can't tell us what we are. Science can't tell us what our natures are, what our natures are stem from, how we were made and built, and why it is we act and say and think the way we do. Science can't tell us what is moral and what is immoral. It can't tell us what is right and what is wrong. It can tell us which button to push. It can tell us how to open a can by flipping the top.
It can tell us about household physics and the rest of it, but it can't tell us what is moral and immoral. It can't tell us what is right from wrong. It can tell government leaders, all right, here are the tools and the weapons. Here is the technology by which you can ring a continent with nuclear submarines. Here are all of the facts about ballistic missiles. Here's the way to make a soft landing on the moon. Here's the way to preserve life in a capsule by letting an earthbound creature take a little of his Earth's atmosphere along with him in the form of packaged food and air. But as to what you're going to do with it, how do you control it, is it right to push the button or wrong to push the buttons, this is where science is silent, because science doesn't know. Science doesn't know what man is, what he's doing here, what his purpose is, and where we are going. But the Bible gives you those answers. Something that can't be discovered in a scientific textbook. Now, the Bible is not a book on science, but without it, science cannot be correctly understood or interpreted. Human nature is explained in the Bible, and human nature is the big culprit in the whole world scene. Human nature is what gets us into our problems, because, unless it sounds oversimplified to you, this world today is the result of human beings in all of our colors, races, languages, and through all of our histories, doing what comes naturally. Remember the old song, doing what comes naturally? That's exactly why we have war in Vietnam. It's exactly why we have all of the debacles politically. It's exactly why we have a world that is trembling on the brink of nuclear insanity today, because people have been living naturally. We live the way that appeals to us. Now, human nature is explained in the book about human nature, which is the Bible, a book that explains why we were made this way, and that there is a great program, a great plan, a great purpose being worked out here below. The hardest question a minister ever has to answer is, why did God let, of course people always want to blame God or name him in it, why did God let a child die? Or what about the lingering agony of a cancer patient? Or why does a dumb animal have to suffer? Or why do, quote, innocent, end quote, people die in an airplane crash? That is, innocent of the particular act which led to their death under those particular circumstances. To clarify what we mean by innocent, people can't find the answer to this. And as one nationally read religious column writer, Lewis Castles, wrote, inability to find a satisfactory answer to the great why is the chief cause of religious doubt. And so people say, I doubt God. I doubt the Bible. I can't see where the Bible is right or that God lives, because if there were a God, as one atheist said, if there were a God, why didn't he make us a world without crippled people, without deaf and dumb and blind, without accidents, without all the thorns, the kicks, the curses, and the bruises? Why did God give us a world of cyclones and tornadoes, of airline crashes and train wrecks? Why did he give us disease? Why do we have the common house fly? If I were God, he said, I would make the world over a little nearer to my heart's desire, and there would be no such things. This man would have made you a world where you would have been governed by an invisible wall. Sort of like if you've ever played with magnets and you've seen how if you get the poles opposite, they will push and repel instead of attract. You know, you can sort of experience certain forces and energies, but you can't see them. And you know they're there. You know you're on a round world and you're held upon it, or an earth, and you're held upon it by gravity. But you can't actually see gravity, yet you know it's there. You can't see air, but it's there. And you can't see electricity. You can only see how it acts and when it heats up an element or something, but you can't see it. But you know it's there. You can't see friction, but you can feel it. You know, we believe in a lot of things we can't see, don't we? Well, now, the point is, if there were such a world of an invisible force, just like gravity, so that every time you as a free moral agent wanted to reach out and do something, or you wanted to say something, or you wanted to even think something which is wrong, you would be prevented from doing so. This would be the kind of a world you would want, according to this atheist who didn't think it through very thoroughly. That would be ideal. He said he would have a world of no accidents. Well, now, how do you figure that? That means you would have to have a world where a workman would be completely incapable of slipshod workmanship. It means you'd have to have a world where the pilot absolutely could not have a drink before the flight. I'm not saying this is the reason for accidents. Some of them could be a combination of many events. Maybe weather. Maybe design. Maybe pilot error. Maybe someone went berserk on the airplane and shot holes through it. Maybe someone placed a bomb on it. This has happened. It's been proved. Let's
talk about the one I mentioned before, about the fellow that put a bomb on an airplane, a lot of, quote, innocent, end quote, in other words, people who didn't cause their own death at that time under those circumstances, died. So people say, well, why did the innocent suffer? Why does God allow it? I'll tell you why. Because this isn't God's world. Because God is keeping hands off. Because God is allowing man to work out his own problems, his own way, to prove to us we can't do it. Because God did fashion this universe and this earth, and he is working out a purpose here below, and creation is not yet completed. God is working on his masterpiece of all time, which is the creation of perfect, righteous character. Now, character is, first of all, having the wisdom and the knowledge to come to discern the difference between right and wrong, and then secondly, having the massive and the fantastic willpower to make yourself do the right instead of the wrong. Now, human nature wants to be right. We want to be thought of as being right. But we don't want to do right. We want to do wrong. And we admit that it's wrong. People have standards. They say, now, why do people cheat and lie? They still call it cheating and lying. But then they try to say that cheating and lying is all right because others do it. And if you don't do it, you're going to get lost in the pack. And this is the only way to get ahead in business, is to cheat and to lie and so on. So this is the way we explain it. New morality, we call it. We relabel it. Would you like to live in a world, the one like the atheist would make, or do you rather like to live in the world God made? You're a free moral agent. You want to think a rotten thought? Have at it. Of course, you're going to have a penalty and a kickback is going to come, but nobody can control your mind but you. Would you have it any other way? You want to pick up and go someplace, do you? How would you like to have some invisible force stop you at the door? How would you like to be just ready to say some juicy little tidbit to the gals over the bridge game about Mrs. So-and-so, when all of a sudden an invisible hand claps itself across your big flapping mouth? You're just about to really tell a good one on Mrs. Green or Jones or Brown or somebody, and all of a sudden, clap, this invisible hand out of nowhere won't let you say a word. Well, this is the kind of world this atheist thought about. He thought about a world where there would be no accidents. Now, what causes accidents? Human error. Whose? Well, that's sometimes difficult to tell. It could be anybody from a riveter, to a designer, to an engineer, to a pilot, to somebody who gave a false weather report, to a man who was incapable of correct judgment because of his lack of knowledge of weather or his lack of training. It could be an instrument failure, which again is human error overall. It could be caprice, we call it. A combination of many events. It could be any number of things, but somewhere, somehow, a human being had something to do with it. And in order to prevent accidents, you've got to prevent human beings from doing what comes naturally. So, you know, God didn't build that kind of world. You don't live in a padded cell. You don't live in an invisible straitjacket. You're able to do exactly as you please, and this is the point. Human nature, doing what comes naturally, is the cause. So why do we blame God? A little boy was run over, and his brother wrote to a magazine or a newspaper, as I read to you, and he said, Dear God. He said he figured God was everywhere, so certainly if he wrote to a newspaper, God would read it. And he said, Why did you let my little brother Timmy die? Well, the point is, why did you let that man drive that car? And why was Timmy in the street? There were a lot of causative factors. Somebody was driving along a street where there were automobiles parked, and Timmy ran out between them. Should automobiles be parked along the street like that in a residential area so that children could come out between them? It's a question. Or should there be big, broad avenues elevated above where children play? Or should they be below? Or should playgrounds be kept completely separate? Should Timmy have been in the street? Well, according to my child psychology books, which I've looked through, yes. I read one child psychologist one time where he said, well, now, a lot of excursions can cause no harm, such as running into the street and so on, but if he does it repeatedly, then you need to surround him with interesting things to occupy his attention so he will gradually was the word they used, lose his interest in running out into the street. But Timmy never had a second chance. He just couldn't gradually lose his interest. Once was enough, you know, and that's the point, and that's why this child psychologist was a little bit off his rocker, I thought. Something that is as permanent as death, it's a little difficult to get out of the habit of getting killed gradually. And so, what was the fellow doing? Well, where was the mind of the driver? I don't know. What kind of condition were his brakes in? I don't know. But there were several factors, but God got the blame. The boy thought God allowed it.
After all, didn't his mother pray to God after the accident? But here's the point, my friends. If Mama had been living according to the Word of God, according to the Book of Proverbs, according to the Bible, regards training her child so he had a deadly fear of running into that street, she wouldn't have had to have prayed in desperation when he lay a helpless, mangled wreck under the wheels of the car. And unless Almighty God would intervene by the use of some invisible force to make people do what they ought to do instead of what they want to do, to force parents to train and punish and teach and instruct their children the way they should instead of the way they want to do, to force drivers to be more cautious, to force workmen to be more careful, to force mechanics to be a little more circumspect, a little more careful, a little more honest, unless God Almighty stepped directly into this world and began to rule it with a rod of iron, you couldn't have a world without accidents. Human nature wants to be free to have its accidents. I got a letter from a teenager who said she was mad at God. She said, "Why has God chosen this generation for the manifestation of his wrath?" She thought religion is for you old folks, as she said. And you've lived your life and you've burned it all up, and now you want to sit back and wait for death to come and have a life after death, and that's all it means to me. And I want to be free, she said, to make my own mistakes. And that's just the point. She's putting it very succinctly. She is. And so are you. Because that's the way God made the world. He made mankind free to make his own mistakes and to learn the bitter lesson that man doing what comes naturally apart from his God, apart from the laws of God, apart from the instruction and the orders and the rules of God, apart from the examples in the lives of others who disobeyed God, in other words, apart from the Bible and apart from obedience to it, is going to end up in a wretched, miserable failure. Politically, racially, militarily, economically, any way you want to slice it, this world is headed in the wrong direction. Human nature is explained in the Bible. All of these points I'm bringing up are based upon Bible factors, especially principles found in the book of Proverbs. We want to be right, but we don't want to do right. We want to be thought of as honest, square, good, but we want to be free to be dishonest and do as we wish. But, you know, it's like when you were a little tiny child. You remember the time when you were caught doing something and tried to lie out of it? And your parents said, "No, tell me the truth, you did do it," and you thought that you had it so perfectly arranged and explained that the fact that your parent caught you at it or suspected it made you mad. And you found yourself reacting very belligerently and actually got very, very angry at your parent because the parent said you were wrong, and you thought, "Well, I don't really think the parent knows I'm wrong. What gives him the right to know I'm wrong? And it makes me mad that he says I'm wrong because I want to be right. I want to appear right." You knew you weren't, but you wanted to appear that way, and it literally made you so angry. You were just real angry at the person for saying you were wrong. Who gets madder? At whom? When the little kid steals marbles off the dime store shelf. Does he get mad at himself or the clerk who catches him? You know, human nature is sort of weird when you stop to think about it. We like to change our labels. There are government agencies that exist for the express purpose of checking labels. We have to be real careful what we buy off the shelf because we want to make sure what is in there is what is stated on the package, and we're not quite sure. And so there are government agencies that have to manage our cigarette packages and our packaged food and our pharmaceuticals. Now, wouldn't it be funny if they labeled them accurately, like people would walk along with labels? "I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, I'm an embezzler, I work in the bank." If we did, it would be a hideous world, wouldn't it? But what about, say, a breakfast cereal? Take baled hay. There's one that looks similar to that. Now, what if it said on the outside of the package, 90% crude fiber, undigestible, result being the same as if you stuck a balloon in your stomach and blew it up. Kills hunger, pain, but doesn't nourish you a bit. The only good you're going to get out of this is the milk and the fruit you put on it. Unless the milk has been boiled so that no good remains in it. Wouldn't it be interesting if we read labels accurately? If we took off the shelf something that said not fit for human consumption, be careful. Rats can die on this, you might survive. If we took off the shelf a little package and it said, inside, ground weed. The Indians anciently called it tobacco. Causative factor of lung cancer. Carcinogenic, careful, and so on. You couldn't get away with it, of labeling things accurately the way they really are. So today, marital infidelity, premarital sampling and experience,
Free Love, it's called, and what's lovely or loving about it is called the New Morality. Now, it's absolutely immoral, and there's certainly nothing new about it, so even the title is a lie. Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, and that's as old as the Garden of Eden and just after. There's nothing new at all about the drive, the lust, the vanity, the jealousy, the greed, the licentiousness that drives a human being, but we like to relabel it so, because people want to do it, they want to be thought of as being right, but they want to do wrong, so while they're doing wrong, they hang out a label that says, I'm right. New morality. Sort of mixed up, aren't we? What if you saw a label on a package of bread that says, store any place, this stuff is preserved so good it'll last 2,000 years? I don't think you'd buy it. And I don't think if you knew that inside the cellophane is some meat is a type of thing like formaldehyde, and if the meat were labeled careful, embalmed, I don't think you'd buy it. But, you know, the principle is you ought to eat foods which do perish, but eat them before they do. You ought to eat foods and grains and so on that are capable of rot and capable of decay and capable of mold and so on, but simply eat them before they decay or grow moldy. That's the whole point. You should eat living food as it is in the process of dying. You know, the minute you pluck up a carrot, it starts to die. So eat it before it gets all the way dead. Don't try to keep it artificially alive by putting a lot of chemicals on it. Well, that's an aside. But still, it makes a lot of sense if you'll think about it. Well, the book about human nature that explains exactly how the world got this way and where we are headed is the Bible. It's about time you gave it the time of day and looked into it for yourself. It explains why this world is the way it is and where it is headed. Now, to get your feet on the ground and to begin studying it and looking into it for the first time for yourself, and to do it rightly and correctly and to know whereof you speak, write for these booklets, Does God Exist? And The Proof of the Bible, and write for our current Plain Truth magazine. In this fantastic era in which you live, you need to know what is your guide. Where are we going? The Plain Truth magazine is free of charge, no price, no advertising, no follow-up. Now also these booklets on the Ten Commandments and the one on the Plain Truth about child rearing. You need to write for those, they're free of charge. And if you want to read about some of the best news you could ever hear, then be sure to write in for this booklet, The World Tomorrow, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, that shows you the exact conditions that will occur on this earth within your lifetime and mine. The way the world will be tomorrow. The good news that is not being reported today. The good news beyond today's bad news. The solution to the big problems that people worry about. How the land is even going to become more productive. The solution to the economic problems and the race problems and the political problems of the world. How total disarmament will finally be achieved. This booklet is full color, graphically illustrated, even depicting conditions the way they can be and the way they will be. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like? It first of all shows you the absolute hopelessness of the predictions you're hearing from government leaders today. And then it shows you the best news you could ever read, a graphically illustrated master plan mapping out the course of this world the way it is going to be, in spite of anything mankind does to the contrary. This booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like? You need to read it. It's absolutely free of charge. There are no strings attached. No one's going to call on you. There is no cost. If you write to us immediately, we'll send it by return mail free of charge. All you need to do is to address your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.